To the Power Factor Show. Episode 138. Sponsored by Rainier Ballistics, Hodgdon Powders, and JPL Precision.
So, welcome back to Power Factor. I'm Rick, and we're going to do one more episode on preparations for the Washington State IDPA Championship. We did one a couple of weeks ago about kind of assigning tasks and stuff that needed to get done well in advance of the match. But the match is actually next weekend as I'm talking now. And so I'm just going to do one more episode about kind of tying things up. And we're actually, the main purpose is I'm going to do a little bit of a review of the stages. A lot of people place importance on seeing the stages in advance so they can make plans. I don't know of how much value it really is. And for an IDPA match, under the current rule books that don't allow extensive walkthroughs of the stages, I don't know that it's really appropriate to publish detailed stage descriptions and diagrams and whatnot well in advance of the stage. But we're going to post it to our forum and probably post it to the website today. So this isn't really too much of an advance notice, but people maybe who just want to take a look or, you know, see what kind of stages we're running. We're going to go through stages one at a time and just give you a little insight into how they arrived in front of me and how I selected them and whatnot. So let's get started. So stage one is a stage that actually is borrowed from another state championship. Somebody locally had gone to a state championship match, I want to say in the Southwest somewhere, and I'd asked for stage designs. So they said, hey, how about if we give you the match booklet for the match we just shot? And I did find a stage that I liked. It's called In the Line of Fire, and we modified it a little bit for our use. The original design had the shooter in a barrel or a tube of some sort. We just replaced it with a horizontal table that can be shot over. There are some issues. If you see in the diagram, there's a target that runs immediately behind the targets that are in the foreground. And so if the target that's running is more than 6 feet further away than the targets in the foreground, then you've got a tactical priority issue of engaging the near targets before the far targets. If you had a vertical line for cover rather than a horizontal line for cover, you'd be pieing that cover as you have a target running across the range from right to left. And so the problem there, of course, would be I knock down the popper to activate the mover. The mover appears on the right as I'm transitioning to T2. Well, if I'm a little bit slow and the mover appears to the left of T2 as I'm pieing, then do I have to switch my focus from the static target to the moving target? And so just to avoid all that kind of tactical priority subjectivity, we just decided to make it, let's have a horizontal surface, shoot over that at three targets that are within 6 feet of all being the same distance from the shooting position. So then it's just a matter of shoot them as you see them, shoot them in whatever order you want. And AT1, on our diagrams, just a little note, static targets are T for target. Appearing targets that do not disappear are AT. That would be something like a maybe a swinger or something that doesn't disappear behind the wall, so it remains visible when it is done activating. And then targets that disappear, like a drop turner or a moving target that passes behind a hardcover wall, those are designated as DT for disappearing target. So in this case, PP1, which is behind T1, when PP1's knocked down, it activates AT1, which runs from right to left. And as you can see in the diagram, it stops just short of disappearing. I use the guidelines from the new rule book that indicate that any target that has the hardcover line right on the line that separates the down zero zone from the down one zone, regardless of how the target is oriented, as long as the line is right on the perf between the down zero and the down one, that's not a disappearing target. So when the AT1 comes to a stop, you'll be able to see the down one zone and the down three zone visible to the left of the hardcover wall. So this should be kind of interesting, just quick and dirty stage, just six rounds. I actually initially wanted that target to be disappearing, but being a revolver shooter, only having six rounds in the gun, it kind of turns it into a limited Vickers stage, and I didn't want to do that. So it is six rounds, Vickers. It should be kind of fun. I like stuff. And this, unlike a lot of our matches, there's a lot of activating, moving, swinging, turning stuff. I think maybe it's because I asked for the outlying clubs in the area to submit courses of fire and staff to work the stages. And I think maybe because they're used to shooting indoors or something, they just kind of went hog wild with the size and the scope of their stages. So there's a lot of movers and stuff that are being activated, which I think makes it a lot more challenging for the shooter. But then it also means you're walking a little bit of a tightrope in terms of dependability on some of this stuff. If you remember the 2012 match review episode, we had a fairly elaborate bobbing, swinging target array that just crapped out on us before the first squad even shot the stage. So anytime you have activating stuff, you got to be careful and make sure that it's going to be durable and run all day. Otherwise, you risk having to toss a stage out. So stage one, it's very straightforward, six rounds, best two. Knock that steel down. And this is the first time I think we've ever run a stage like this where the steel target is not actually a target. All it is an activator. You're shooting through T1 to get to the activator, but PP1 is not really a scored target. It could be just, you know, doesn't, the fact that it's in the shape of a pepper popper is just kind of a coincidence. But if you don't engage the pepper popper, you don't knock it down, that is, AT1 won't activate, and then all the penalties will apply on AT1. Stage two. This was a stage that we've run at two of our club matches prior over the course of the year. And it was an interesting stage. We ran it the first time. The non-threat target that appears between the two steel plates, the first time we ran it, we did just a paper non-threat in the middle, which meant, of course, any rounds that hit the non-threat, you get a penalty for hitting them. Then we ran the stage again with a steel, I don't even think it was a non-threat, I think it was just a steel target in the middle, so that if you miss the paper or you miss the steel poppers, plates, you know you missed if they were missing low, because of course you hear the clang, clang, clang as you hit the steel. But I actually want there to be the risk of penalties. I didn't want it to be just a steel, like a steel non-threat. I want it to be a paper non-threat, so that if you do miss those plates and hit the non-threat, that you'll get the penalties for it. And we discussed this stage in great detail a few episodes back because of it was a stage about episode about how to approach a stage, and there was a lot of stuff in there about if you miss, you'll have to do a reload. If you hit the non-threat, then you look at all the penalties and the reloading times and whatnot as they're adding up, and that could affect the order in which you engage the targets or how you approach the stage. But it's best two each on the initial three paper targets as you're backing up to the cover of the barrels, and then we'll be using the barrels as cover to engage the two plates. So that should be kind of fun. It was very interesting when we ran it earlier this year, and it should be interesting again. Now, stage three, this is another homegrown stage that we've run. We ran it at a match earlier this year. We bought this device. I call it the Drazy device. I posted that the stage that it included this Drazy device, and people then start sending me emails, what's a Drazy device? And Drazy Metalworks is a company that makes or made various target stands and activators and whatnot. And this one came from Drazy. We bought it a few years ago, and it looks sort of like a plate rack with three targets on it. And when the thing is set, the targets are all face down in front of the framework. And then when you activate it, and it can be activated with a popper, or you could pull on a rope. In this case, we're going to use one of those pressure pads. it will activate the first target, which will flip over, and then when it's done flipping, it activates the second target, which flips over, which activates the third target, which flips over. So you get this kind of a ripple effect, 1, 2, 3. And it's more of a threat of difficulty than it really is difficult. I mean, I think you start thinking about disappearing targets, and you have this sense that there's time pressure to engage them, and they move pretty quickly, but not really quickly. So we were trying. This is an interesting stage too, because it was originally it started out as a 12-round stage. Engage the first target with 6 while backing to cover, and then arriving at cover, you need 6 more to complete the engagement on the 3 disappearing targets. Now, the problem, of course, with that is, as you can imagine, the majority of the shooters will be starting the stage with 11 rounds in their gun. And with a 12-round course of fire, with the last target being a disappearing target, it might occur to somebody to fire just 11 rounds, skip a reload, and take the mic on the third disappearing target. And we went around and around, should we make it an 11-round stage, you know, different things. And then we just said, okay, let's just put an off-the-clock TAC load after arriving at the cover position. That way, everybody will be stoked to capacity. Nobody can pretend like they didn't know how many rounds it was. Nobody can make the decision consciously to, I'm not going to reload, I'm just going to fire 11, and that kind of shenanigans. So we turned it into a stage with 2 strings. And that's another thing we generally don't do. I can count on one hand, I think, the number of stages we've had at our club matches over the years that included an off-the-clock tack load. But we actually have 3 stages in this year's state championship that have off-the-clock tack loads. So it's kind of interesting from my perspective. And in this case, we introduced it just to kind of solve this problem with the 12 rounds minimum to complete the course of fire that finishes up with a disappearing target that, yeah, for some reason, maybe not everybody's going to get off that 12th round. And we just wanted to kind of make sure everybody understood, you know, how the 12 rounds are supposed to be expended. Now, stage 4, this is a stage that was submitted. My buddy Bob, who's coming down from BC to shoot the match, sent this stage to me. It's just a little 8-rounder. You're shooting from inside a tent, shooting through essentially the windows of the tent to get to T1 through T4. And it's pretty easy. I mean, you think about it, okay, I'm inside the tent, I jump up, there's 4 targets, let's say there's 4 windows, 1 target per window. But the problem with that, of course, is that you're not allowed to cross a port until you've engaged the targets that are available through the port. So depending on where the bed is, where you start, the cot, where you start the stage, and where the targets are oriented relative to the windows, you could have a situation where somebody would prefer to maybe jump up and find some kind of a sweet spot in the middle of the room where they can just stand there and get all 4 targets. But then, of course, the safety officer is left to wonder, okay, while he's engaging the third target, he's 6 feet from this second window. Is he exposed to that target or not? And so it's going to be a little bit of a trick, I think, to get the target set up in such a way that people engage them in the sequence that we want them to avoid these subjective, is he in the window? Is he standing in the center of a port? Did he bypass a port? And we'll get that straightened out by match day to, again, prevent the shooters from having to make a decision like that that could adversely affect their score. Very straightforward. We've run a similar stage to this in past matches, and I just threw it in there because I thought it'd be kind of fun from inside the tent. Stage 5, Save the Diamonds. This is another stage that was put together. It was actually an element of a stage. It was put together by one of the outlying clubs. It had been like a 12 or 14 or 16 round stage, and I thought, you know, I don't really need a 16 round stage. What I need, though, is an 8 round stage. So let's just take the initial engagement and make that a short stage, cut the rest of it off. What I like to do is, rather than have, say, every stage have a 16, or every bay have a 16 or 18 round stage on it, some of the stages, I like to keep them small and put two short ones in a given bay. And so in this case, I needed just a couple of 6 or 8 rounders that I could run side by side in a single bay, but with two different scenarios, two completely different target setups and whatnot. And I think that's a little more realistic when you're talking about defensive shooting. Instead of having, let's say, a 12 or a 16 round stage in the bay, have an 8 rounder and a 6 rounder, or 2 6 rounders, because each scenario is a little more realistic, I think, when you're firing 6 rounds, than these kind of extensive running around looking for things to shoot that you often get with 16 or 18 round courses fire. And it's not like we don't have any of those, but I think a lot of major matches are just a lot of high round count relative to what IDPA is used to, high round count stages. And I like to keep, you know, have some little quick and dirty stages, so we always have some 6 and 8 rounders. But this is pretty straightforward. The club that designed the stage has built a prop so that picking up, lifting the weight of the briefcase off the table will activate the swinger. And so you're required then to maintain the briefcase in your weak hand as you're engaging the swinger while moving to cover of B, being the end of the wall, there where you can get it, although the target's not labeled, it's T1. But so it's just a quick 8-round stage. Now we go to bay 4. Now this stage was actually, it's interesting, we've been asking for stage designs of our viewers. Hey, send us some stages, we'll review them on the show, you know, we'll pick them apart, make you feel bad. And one of the stages that I received was from a viewer named Jim, and he sent the stage to me with some questions about, he thought there were some issues with people sweeping themselves on the draw, and just there were a number of issues with the stage. And I suggested alternate start positions, off the clock reload, and some stuff to just to kind of make it legal, a little easier to officiate, less likely to result in disqualifications. And then after I'd spent some time looking at it, I thought, you know, that's a pretty cool stage, actually. So I decided, Jim, we're going to use your stage. So how could I you know, complement it more highly than it included in the championship match? So fire drill stage 6. You start seated in the passenger side of the car. At the start position, you can only see the two targets, T1 and T2, out the passenger side window. The little wrinkle on this stage is that all targets are engaged with 3 rounds. It's the most of the targets on the in the match are engaged with 2. We've got a few that you engage with 6 while you're backing up or whatever, but almost most stages, I think you still find 2 rounds per stage. So this is a little shakeup, 3 rounds per stage. Start seated in the car, on the signal, retrieve the gun, bang, 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 and that's the end of the first string. So we get out of the car, do our tactical reload, and right there outside the passenger seat of the car is the platform activator that will activate AT1 and AT2. It shows up in the diagram, I think, as a swinger and a drop turner. I'm actually hoping those are going to be just pop-up targets that remain standing, but it doesn't really matter. They won't be visible at the start signal, but after you step on the platform, they'll either pop up like this or they'll do their little dance. Either way, they're appearing targets. Backing away then to the rear corner of the car while you engage those activating targets, AT1, AT2. You move your way around the opposite side of the car, which is called out on the diagram as position C. And from C, you'll engage T3, and then the driver's side door will be cracked open, and you'll move forward to the door to get T4. And so it's just working your way around the car using the different corners of it and whatnot as cover. Should be kind of fun. So thanks for that, Jim. Cool stage. Stage 7. This is another one from one of the outlying clubs. This one should be kind of fun. It's called Victory Motel. And if you're a movie fan as well as a competitive shooter, you'll recall that Victory Motel was the place where bad things happened in the movie L.A. Confidential. It's where the local mob boss persuaded people not to mess with them. It was just a run-down motel on the edge of Los Angeles, as it turns out in the movie. And so that was kind of the theme for this stage. If you've ever seen the movie, there's two cops caught in the motel, surrounded by the bad cops, and there's a major shootout, all from essentially inside this motel room. And so we've taken elements from the scene in the movie to make this stage. You start up close to a couple of targets, then you move to a platform and shoot through a port down at the targets that are on the ground below the port. Then you move through a door to engage some more targets. Then at the end, you go prone. And if you've seen the movie, there's a scene where Russell Crowe goes down through the floor, a hole in the floor, and he can see people walking around in the space between the ground and the bottom of the building. So you get this view of the legs of the people walking past. So we're using these leg dropper activators. It looks sort of like a conventional target stand, but the target is hinged, and when you drop one of the legs out, it's like a piece of angle iron, you shoot that out, it allows the paper target to drop down, and then you can engage the paper. So if you can imagine, you're under this floor and you're engaging the legs of these people that are walking past, threats that are walking past, and then they drop down and you can engage the paper target. So anyway, Victory Motel. This should be kind of a fun one. These leg droppers are kind of interesting. I've managed to drop them with a single shot, and I've managed to use a magazine full to get them both. So it's just like a piece of angle iron, 2 or 3 inches wide, and you hit that, knock that out, the prop out, cause the target to fall. So it should be kind of fun. Now, stage 8, Inconvenience Store. This is another one provided by a local club to us, and it's got some, this is another one that's got a lot of activators on it. You've got the cash register at the start position, and pressing like the return button on the cash register starts the swinger swinging. In this case, the swinger is a non-threat, and you've got to get 2 rounds on each of the targets while you're backing away from the start position. Then you, from position B, you've got a pepper popper that activates a clamshell. You get the threat target that pops up, and then after it's there momentarily, the non-threat pops up in front of it. And since it's an AT one, we know that when the activation is complete, that the non-threat will not be completely blocking the threat target, because then it would be a disappearing target. The head will be visible, at least part of the head, so most of the head, maybe all the head. So that's an AT. Then you move to position C to get T4 and T5, move to position D. Now position D, you'll see we've got a pepper popper that's directly in front of the non-threat. That's always kind of fun. And then we've got this activating target where you hit the popper, and when, as it falls, it causes a paper target to swing through 180 degrees, so you just get kind of a fleeting view of it. And again, that's why it's called out in the diagram as a DT, because it will be disappearing when it's done activating. Stage 9. This is another one. This one's kind of fun. It better be. It took a while to hash this one out. Get the details approved. You start astride a motorcycle. You're at the gas pumps getting gas, and you know the bad guys are there like they usually are in an IDPA match. And so you've got to get off the bike, use the bike as cover to engage the first 4 targets, move to the table. There's another one of these activating platforms to get the swinger swinging. And then you've got a low cover shot on T5 from around the far end of the table at position C. So again, it's just, fairly basic stuff, but there's a little bit of movement, a little bit of cover, shooting over cover, shooting around cover, finishing up with a low cover position. That's one of the things that a number of these stages had low cover positions that weren't the last position. And I think the new rule book that'll be out in October actually requires that if there's a position of low cover or prone, it's got to be the last position on the course of fire. And so kind of redesigning some of this stuff to integrate that into the stage so that we don't have people getting up, from prone or whatever on the clock, And this is one of those stages that required a little fiddling around with it. But so the motorcycle, I mean, you know, sometimes the stage, the shooting problem isn't that big of a deal. I mean, shooting over cover at four targets isn't that big of a deal. But using the motorcycle as cover is kind of the wrinkle. It should be kind of interesting. I mean, a lot of the stages, I think, are like that. We've just introduced some kind of a little thing like that that doesn't really change the shooting challenge, but it's just enough of a kind of a novelty. Like, okay, I have to get off the motorcycle and get to my gun. I personally have never got off a motorcycle to get a gun. So we'll see how that goes. Stage 10 on the pistol range. This is kind of a stage that is just thrown in every year. We always do, since we've usually got 12, 14, 15 stages, I always like to throw in at least one that is just a shooting drill that tests. It's usually strong hand, weak hand, and reloading. In some variation, I mean, I'll do stages where you're shooting over a counter, strong hand, under the counter, weak hand. You know, just trying to introduce a little variety, but try to also get all of this strong hand, weak hand stuff out of the way on this one stage, because nobody really likes to shoot drills. I mean, people want to run around and shoot the scenario courses of fire, so I try to get it all out of the way in one stage. And this is one we've run before. There's nothing especially clever about it, but it just, like I said, it gets everything done. You start with a gun downloaded to six. You engage the most distant target freestyle with six rounds. Now you're at slide lock. You do your slide lock reload, go to the center target, six rounds, strong hand only. Now you perform a retention reload, because of course when you did your first reload, you stoked your gun back up to capacity. So now you do a mandatory retention reload, transfer the gun to the weak hand, and six rounds on the closest target. So that's 18 rounds, gets all that, most of that stuff out of the way. People don't like it. I know I don't like it, but I always throw it in there just because I think it, on a big major match, you should have some, at least a major match shot in 2013. You should have some shooting drills in there. Stage 11. This is another rerun. We always do a long range stage. The rule book says occasional shots out to 35 yards, so we take it seriously and always include a 35 yard stage. We try not to make it a stage that, you know, people's match scores are going to revolve around how well they do on it, because I think, you know, 35-yard defensive shooting is kind of a minimal value. But again, like the strong, weak reload stage, I think having a stage with some long-range shooting on it isn't a bad idea. So this is actually a stage we've run before. It's based on an actual event. There was a shooting at Fairchild Air Force Base, which is over on the east side of Washington. Some crazed guy came on the base hospital, apparently, shot some people, and then an airman who was on patrol by bicycle took the guy out at 60 yards. We didn't have 60 yards, so we're doing it at 35, but we've introduced the bicycles. Before, the bicycle was just part of the scenario. You know, that's how the guy happened to show up, you know, on the scene to shoot the threat, was because he was riding a bicycle. This year we decided we're actually going to have bicycles sitting on the stage. Everybody's going to be standing near a bike at the start signal, and we're going to allow people to either shoot standing or kneeling, or if they want to improvise some kind of a rest by resting the gun on the bike, that's going to be allowed as long as they stay, you know, in the vicinity of the start position. There's no charging the targets or whatever, but we're going to allow them to take alternate shooting positions for the 35-yard shot. And this stage is kind of fun. I mean, there's a certain amount of anxiety about it, but it's, you know, it's not that tough. 35 yards, not that tough. Now, stage 12, Mall Madness. One of the things that I think this will be, if you're not familiar to the show, you haven't heard my spiel about it in the past, this is the 12th annual Washington State Championship. This will be the 11th time we've hosted it at our club, and there's usually at our matches at least one stage that I describe as the circus stage, and usually it's something that's got a lot of activators, stuff that is happening in a certain sequence where once it starts you can't stop it, there's no do-overs kind of a thing. And I think this is the stage, even though it was designed by one of the outlying clubs, again, one of the clubs that shoots indoors. So I think when they get the opportunity to shoot outdoors through 180 degrees, you know, their eyes kind of glaze over and they get pretty excited about it. So this stage is by far the biggest and most complex of the match. It's got two running targets, they're running, you know, motorized targets, or they're spring-loaded, that you're engaging while they're moving. One of them you're engaging while it's moving and you're moving. And then we've got a cover, a couple of cover positions where we've got a pop-up target, a swinger that's swinging behind a non-threat target. And then at the end, we've got a pop-up kind of a clamshell deal. So this should be a fun stage. At the start signal, you're standing at position A. Really nothing is visible. I mean, that's the thing that's interesting, is almost all the targets on this stage appear after they've been activated in the correct sequence. And so it's kind of interesting. It looks very busy and complicated looking at the diagram, but of course the diagram shows all the targets that are sort of in the position in which you'll engage them. But of course at the start position, T1 will be kind of, DT1, the first target you engage, will be behind a wall before it activates and appears. T1 will be kind of buried back in the barrels there, so you can't see it from the start position. DT2 will be activated by the arrival of DT1 at the end of its run, so it'll be appearing. AT1 is activated by the popper, so AT1 will be down flat until you hit the popper. That then activates DT3. Which is a disappearing target because, of course, it's swinging behind a non-threat, and when it comes to rest, it will be immediately behind the non-threat, so it's a disappearing target. But you'll have plenty of opportunities to hit it. I mean, it's going to swing half a dozen times. It's not like it just shows up once and then stops. It's swinging behind the non-threat. And then we've got another pop-up, hit the popper, causes the appearing target. And then the last one, which is activated by hitting the popping up of AT2, will be a clamshell where the non-threat ends up blocking the most of the AT target. So this should be kind of fun. It's one of the things that I think, because I've shot a lot of USPSA stages like this, I don't get too excited. And I don't want to say I don't get excited about it. I'm excited to shoot it, but I don't feel any anxiety about it, because this kind of complexity is something I've seen many, many times. But a lot of, I think, IDPA shooters, if you're used to shooting local club matches, we set all of our club matches up on the day of the match. You know, the stages need to be able to be set up in half an hour to an hour. So usually we might have a swinger or a drop turner or something like that on a given stage to give it a little excitement. But because we have almost an entire week to set these up, there's a lot more complexity in it. And it can sometimes, I think, kind of get people a little wound up when they see these things that activate in sequence, and if they're disappearing targets, you're maybe only going to have one chance to engage them. So we try not to make it too difficult. I mean, there's two schools of thought. I mean, I used to kind of go with the theory that it's okay to have courses of fire that only a masterclass shooter is able to really do well on them. I mean, we're talking about a championship match. If there's a course of fire that you've got to be really quick and really accurate to get all the shots on target, that's okay. The alternate theory is the masterclass shooters are going to win regardless, whether the stages are simple or complex. So why make them so complex that a marksman class shooter can't complete them? I mean, their score is not going to be as good as the masterclass shooter. But why, for instance, have a disappearing target that, unless you're a masterclass shooter, you're not going to get any rounds on it? It's going to disappear, say, before a marksman even can get to it. And that's kind of, I don't think, I've kind of come around to the idea that everything should be doable for everybody, and the top shooters are still going to win, whether it's extremely easy or extremely difficult. So there's no reason to make it extremely difficult. So this stage has a lot of stuff going on, but it shouldn't be so difficult that everybody can't get two rounds on each target that needs to. Now, stage 13. This is an interesting one. We have charging targets on this one. DT1 and DT2 will be charging the shooter at position A. It's supposed to be a situation, the scenario, you're walking your dog, and so jerking on the leash causes these targets to come charging towards you. And it should be fun. Again, hopefully, I mean, I want them to be moving kind of quickly, but not so quickly that it's just, you know, a flash kind of an exposure. I'm hoping we're going to have some time to kind of track these targets as we engage them, but we'll handle that at setup. And then move to B. And one of the things that we've always done at our club, when I started shooting USPSA in 1997, the club that I belonged to, when we had a target that required a headshot, the targets that required headshots were indicated by a strip of black tape that runs across the throat, the tape being down below below the perf that separates the head from the body. And so if the target requires only headshots, you could, if you wanted to, you know, paint the whole target black. Or if it requires body shots and headshots, we always score the two separately, essentially establish the head as one target and the body as another target. So you have A, the indicator. I've seen courses of fire where they say, engage T1, two to the body, one to the head. Engage all the other targets, just two to the body. But you have to remember that T1 is the one that gets two to the body, one to the head, because it looks just like all the others. Well, this way, putting the tape on there not only allows you to score them separately, let's say a body, a round that hits the, it misses the head and hits the body, you know it's a round that missed. But then also, although it's kind of maybe devious and underhanded, I like the idea that even though you've got a single cardboard target downrange, you actually could accumulate two FTNs on that same physical target because it's been divided into two. And my theory behind that is the whole point of two to the body, one to the head, known as a Mozambique drill, is that you've engaged the head of the target because the first two to the body failed to have the desired effect. So you follow those up with a headshot. Well, I figured if you get the two to the body but then miss the one to the head, you have failed to neutralize. The whole point of the drill is a failure to neutralize drill. You go two to the body, one to the head. If the head shot misses, then you didn't neutralize the guy. And so I'm kind of mixing my scoring with my tactics, but that's kind of the way I like it. So you see T1 and T3 are the bodies of the targets. T2 and T4 are the heads of the targets. So the procedure says engage T1 and T3 with two rounds each, engage T2 and T4 with one round each. There shouldn't be, you know, there's no mistaking these targets as the one for a target that doesn't require headshots, of course, because we've got the indicator on there, and then it's easy to score, and I can get people for two FTN sometimes. Hopefully not. And then at the end, we've got these pop-ups that are activated, knock down the popper activator, and the AT pops up. And that's that. That's that. 13 stages. Three of them with two strings with the tack reload in the middle. Lots of steel, lots of activators. It should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to start setup on Wednesday. Get the majority of the stuff set up Wednesday, Thursday. Staff match is Friday. And then we'll go into the main match on Saturday and Sunday. And I emailed the range master and the assistant match director on Thursday, I think, and said, I'm just going to try to kind of lay low this weekend, take some time away from this. But it's been, I think my wife is not too happy with me. She's painting the basement while I'm out here talking about a match that isn't for another week yet. She didn't say that, but I know that's what she's thinking. So anyway, we're trying to get the stuff nailed down. The match booklet is, I've just seen, I think it was the second draft of the match booklet this morning. Hopefully that we'll get that nailed down before the end of today so we can print it on Monday. And if you're shooting the match and you want to print your own copy of the match booklet, you should be able to find it, I believe, at the match website. So if you're interested, you can just look it up, Washington State IDPA Championship 2013, and the match booklet should be posted there. So if you want to print a copy of it, you can. Should be fun. I noticed, I promised I'd show off the match hat. Here's the staff hat. This is supposed to have, my design theory was that it would look sort of like a NASCAR hat. I get some feedback from people who they don't like match hats that have targets and guns and stuff on them because they can't wear it to church or they can't wear it to the 7-Eleven or whatever because they don't want to be identified as a gun person. Either they don't want to get hassled or they don't want to get followed home or whatever it is. They like the kind of non-gun hat. So I tried to come up with a logo that just was kind of ambiguous enough that people wouldn't obviously look at it and go, oh, gun, you know, like the obvious fisherman's vest or the obvious fanny pack. We don't want the obvious match hat. So I tried to pick up on this, again, kind of the NASCAR theme with what sort of looks like your car number on the side and then the big trophy in the middle that has some gun barrels poking out, but they could just as easily be car bumpers, I suppose. So, and we of course have our weekly trivia contest, and since this year's 2013 Washington State Championship is being run under the existing 2005 rule book, and probably any matches that I'm involved in the future will be run under the new 2013 rule book that takes effect in October, the question revolves around a stage procedure that will be used in this year's Washington State Championship. And the question is, as written, is this a legal stage, or is this aspect of the stage legal under the 2013 rule book as it is under the 2005 rule book? So keep our rules straight. The rule book in effect for the match is the 2005 with addendum. And the question is, if this were being run under the new 2013 rules, would this be legal or not? And this is Stage 8, Inconvenience Store. And the procedure says, at start signal, press the emergency button, which will activate the non-threat swinger. Then retrieve your gun and engage T1 through T3 with at least two rounds each in tactical sequence while moving to B. From B, engage activator PP1, then AT1. Then move to cover of C, and engage T4 through T5 with at least two rounds each. Move to cover of D and engage PP2, activator PP3, and DT1. Now in the notes, it says, reloads may be performed at B, C, and or D, and while moving between those positions after engaging threats available from each position. So the question is, would that be legal under the 2013 rule book? Reloads may be performed at B, C, and D, and while moving between those positions after engaging threats available from each position. So it's just a true-false question. If you want to cite a rule, that'd be great, but this is like an open book test, so just come up with the right answer, and let's see how it goes. If you have any questions about this, I may not be able to get back to you until next week. I'm going to be at the range Tuesday through Sunday, but send me an email, and if I've got time, I'll get back to you on it. And we will, of course, you'll want to contact us at powerfactorshow@gmail.com, the website powerfactorshow.com, or like us on Facebook if you like Facebook. So until next time, I'm Rick, and we'll see you at the range.